Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Mini Break, your daily podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Friday, February 21st. Another week of fantastic professional action in the books. We've got the WTA event in Dubai for phenomenal semifinalists, setting us up for a really fun weekend of tennis there. Three ATP events to run through: the ATP 500 in Rio, the 250 in Marseille, and the 250 in Del Rey. What a day we have to talk about. And joining me to break down another day of fantastic tennis results, you know him as the co-host of our Wednesday, actually co-host of all of these Mini Break podcasts, let's be honest, former Denison men's tennis superstar, and of course a man we affectionately referred to as James Foster McDonald. Jamie, welcome back to the Mini Break. How are you doing?
Appreciate it. Doing all right. Like I was telling you before the pod, right now my tennis mind being tugged in about a million different directions, right? We got all these different tournaments. Then a place near and dear to my heart, D3 Indoor, start tomorrow for the men. So going to be a lot of fun, a lot of tennis to watch, particularly throughout the weekend. But hey, that's what we like to do, so I'm excited.
Nothing made me more devastating. And last 12 days we've been on the road for Cracked Rackets have been phenomenal. Maybe the most fun days I've had of my professional life thus far. But, you know, the idea of missing Felix Auger-Aliassime make an ATP 500 final that I didn't get to watch a second of his run until after it happened was devastating. I was like, you know, I agree. There's so much going on in the tennis world at all times. It is hard to keep track of anything. I know you're looking forward to that D3 event. Hopefully we'll get the chance to cover it some here. I know you and I this weekend are going to be doing a live video Great Shot podcast giving our winners and losers in this post-Australian Open stretch of professional tennis, so we'll both have a chance to give our thoughts on the run of events that have occurred in case any of our listeners have missed anything. But yeah, it's been a phenomenal sequence of tennis over these past 4 weeks, and of course we try to keep you all up to date here on our Mini Break podcast. The reason we're able to do that, our friends at Diadem, who of course have been so kind in sponsoring this podcast, their string and racket technology on the forefront of all innovations going on right now in the tennis world. And look, you don't have to take my word for it. Take the word of professionals Carousel, Sekou Bangoura, who are already using those rackets on the tour. I've mentioned this before. One of my greatest regrets is I saw a beautiful Diadem bag going around the corner while I was in Kentucky at the Kentucky Open, and I wasn't quick enough to track her down and say, wait, give me your testament. Why should I be using Diadem? And I think it's quite clear. And of course, they make it even better for you listeners. Use our promo code CR50, 50% off your order of Diadem gear. And, you know, again, we are so grateful for them partnering with us. Jamie, I feel like my game's not going to get any worse. Certainly Diadem could help me turn the corner.
If you're in, I don't know, if you're in your corner, got to do something to get it better, right? Why not turn to Diadem? That'll at least get you halfway there.
That's what I'm saying. At the very least, you know, that don't be Alex Gruskin. Go get yourself a Diadem racket right now. But with that in mind, again, a fantastic slate of results to talk about. Let's start in Dubai. I think time zone wise, this is actually the event that works best for us now because most of that play done by 2, 3, 4 p.m. Eastern time. So you get the chance to actually watch all of the highlights. I talked about on today's Mini Break, Elena Rybakina and her fantastic straight set win over Karolina Pliskova. Three more results to run through since then to get us set up for the semifinals. Petra Martic, the number 8 seed, 7-6-6-1 over Australian Open quarterfinalist Annette Contave. That was a great result. But the two that really caught my eye, and let's start with the one that involved an American tennis player, Jennifer Brady, who now, you talk about her start of the year. She has had a good start, and I talked about it on this morning's Mini Break. You look at what she's done. Yes, the first round loss at the Australian Open to Simona Halep, but given what Halep did in that tournament, you can certainly understand that with context. But at Brisbane, she made the quarterfinals. She knocked off Ashley Barty to kick off her year. You look at where she's at in the live rankings right now. Jennifer Brady, the 24-year-old, sitting at number 45, a career high. And you can understand why. The level she showed today against Garbine Muguruza, knocking her off 6-7, 6-3, 6-4. I mean, it's crazy, Jamie. Jennifer Brady at one point was not even playing number one for her UCLA team, that she's shown this level of tennis. She's been spectacular to kick off 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the things that she does so well and what absolutely came through in this one is just being able to stick to her guns and play the big points well. And that's something that ultimately was really, really on her side in this match and not on the side of Muguruza at all. Because when you look at it, interestingly, throughout the match, of course, a three-set grind here, but Muguruza gets 10 break point opportunities, only converts one of them across the three sets. However, Jennifer Brady gets 6 across the match, converts 4 of them. I mean, there's your match right there.
Yeah, and for Jennifer Brady, that she did not served particularly well on the first serve. You know, Garbine Muguruza had plenty of chances, as you mentioned, and it reminded me so much of the matches we saw Muguruza grind out at the Australian Open, where she's just able to use her return as a first strike ball, and then from there, whether it's backhand cross court, backhand line, whatever pattern fits her on that day, moving forward and finishing those points off at the net when she gets you stretched. You know, Muguruza was able to do that, but like you mentioned, in the biggest moments, whether she would come up with a serve plus one backhand, which I actually thought was the cleaner of the two sides for Jennifer Brady today, particularly on that deuce side, did a really good job of taking that first backhand cross court, getting Muguruza stretched, and then opening up the rest of the court for herself. The forehand's a little funky. It's a big loop, Jamie, you know, big backswing for Jennifer Brady, but I mean, you can't deny her pop. I mean, she can hit it as hard as anyone.
Oh, absolutely. And that's part of, if not a ton of, what made this match so much fun to watch, because both of these players, of course, have the firepower. We've seen it from both of them, especially Muguruza when it comes to the absolute top level of the sport. It was not a letdown. And in the big moments, you know, there were some big time groundstroke rallies. Ultimately, like we talked about, though, Brady just too good in those big moments.
It reminded me so much of that Muguruza-Pavlyuchenkova quarterfinal, where just both of them were going after the ball and playing big. And, you know, it's a credit to Jennifer Brady that I don't think Garbine Muguruza played poorly at all. The big points just happened to go Jennifer Brady's way. You look at total points, you know, 99 for Brady, 98 for Muguruza. Yeah. This was an either-or match in every sense of the word. And you're right, definitely, to your point earlier, it's a testament to Brady's execution on the biggest points that she was able to get the win. And now she's going to have a really fun semifinal here as she's going to take on the number one seed, Simona Halep, in a rematch of that Australian Open first round. Simona Halep putting forward another fantastic performance today, this time over number seven seed Arina Sabalenka, who beat her earlier in this 2020 season in straight sets. Halep able to overcome the firestorm that is Sabalenka, 3-6, 6-2, 6-2 in this one. I came up with this hot take that I wanted to tweet out today. I've been firing out hot tweets nowadays, Jamie. I have more time on my hands, so I'm like, let me just throw this out there, see what the world has to say. Hopefully some of you saw my Twitter poll right now asking, you know, Roger Federer pulls out, and so, all right, Djokovic and Nadal team are the top three contenders. Who's number four for you heading into the French Open? But my hot take, Simona Halep related, I know she lost her semifinal match at the Australian Open, but the level she showed in Australia in the run-up to that, the level she showed today in bouncing back against Sabalenka, tell me why she's not the front runner entering every major in this 2020 season.
Yeah, I mean, she's one of those people who, in any sort of tournament, she can be, right? Of course, you know, we talk about the depth of play in the WTA field right now and how crazy it is and how many people have a shot to win a title and realistically have a shot to win a title, not just a crazy dark horse. But yeah, I mean, you're crazy if you're not talking about Halep in that conversation every time you start and look ahead, especially on a big stage, because you're right. I mean, she's shown it, you know, she has a proven track record and she has the ability to just squeak out matches like this. And that's what she did in three sets today.
Yeah, without a doubt. And again, you look at the stats for Halep, everything she did, just solid. You know, Sabalenka is going to take big rips at the return no matter what, she's seeing, whether it's a first or second serve. Halep still maybe takes a little bit off the first, but makes 72% of those first serves. wins 58% of those points, 68% of the second serve points. She went down the line when she needed to. I thought that's in particular the adjustment she made in the second set, making that switch to going down the line while on the run, not just playing cross court, playing safe, going down the line, saying, you know what, Sabalenka, if you can track that ball down, hit a winner, good on you. But she played more aggressive. She had faith in her shots. And more importantly, you know, Sabalenka, Muguruza, Jennifer Brady, Pavlyuchenkova, who I mentioned earlier, all of these players are just bombers from the baseline. Simona Halep is not that. And that contrast in style between her and her opponent always brings out the best of tennis. It's always an aesthetically pleasing matchup because what Halep's able to do is so different, I think, than everyone else at the top of the women's game. Jamie, would you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, I mean, look, she's got a unique play style. You know, she's somebody who's obviously going to counterpunch and you know, run down balls. In some ways, you see it when you talk about like a Wozniacki or a Kerber to some degree. Obviously, clear differences between the two, but or between the three, excuse me. But you know what I mean, in the sense that, you know, when they have a clash with somebody who's a hard hitter, who's going to be dictating every point, you know, it's one of those matches, you know what you're getting into. And I think in a lot of ways, that's what we saw in this match. Certainly, there were some surprises here and there throughout. I think there were some crazy battles, you know, in the second and third set, really trying to wrangle control of the set, especially in those first few games. And then, you know, someone happened to run away with it. But realistically, when we're looking at this match, I think you sit back and afterward you look at it and you watch the highlights or you watch the full match and you're like, yeah, okay, that looked about how I would expect it to, right? I mean, Sabalenka's pushing the envelope. She's the one who's really dictating play. She's, you know, banging the ball from the baseline. Halep's making her hit one, two, three more balls. And then when Halep does have the chance, you know, she's really grown into her aggressive game, step into the ball and, you know, make people uncomfortable. So the fact that she has all those tools at her disposal now, of course, makes her super dangerous. And, you know, that's one of the reasons she was able to get it done.
Yeah, I do want to say 3-6, 6-2, 6-2. Those last two sets sound lopsided, but 76 total points for Halep, 65 total points for Sabalenka. Uh-huh. This was a close match. Sabalenka certainly had her chances.
Yeah.
This was a really fun match. I agree with you. I think Simona Halep continues to play great. The hot take was I think she's going to win two majors this year. I know she's only got three left to do it, but she's my favorite entering the French Open. And as of right now, there's a lot of way to go, but I think that's for sure the pick I'm going to end up going with, Jamie.
I mean, yeah, fair enough. I can't fault you too much. I mean, look, looking for anyone.
Yeah, it's not exactly
person
a bold
in the WTA,
take.
Right? Well, I mean, but yeah, but like, I don't know, saying any one person in the field that WTA is right now is going to win two out of three next majors is a bold statement. That being said, if you have to pick somebody who can do it, it's somebody who we've seen show that level of consistency. And recently, that's been someone like Simona Halep.
Yeah, I think we can leave that there. And then, again, just quick picks for the semifinals because I believe going on from here forward, we've offered weekend mini breaks for free. I think those weekend mini breaks now going to be exclusive to our Patreon subscribers. So for people who aren't going to catch that, although we encourage everyone, you're going to want to hear these weekend mini breaks. You know, the tennis doesn't stop just because it's Saturday and Sunday. But your picks for the semifinals, first Halep Brady, then Martic Rybakina.
Yeah, well, all right, let me pull a bit of a U here. I've got a question for you, and I wanted to ask
like
it before
it.
We really did the preview. So, you know, we talk about game styles clashing here. How does the Brady-Halep semifinal differ from the Sabalenka-Halep quarter? What are the differences you see in that clash?
I mean, with all due respect, Sabalenka is just a little bit better. I mean, she just hits a little bit bigger than Brady. Although Brady might be a little bit more consistent, I think the Sabalenka first serve is a little bit more powerful. I just think everything Sabalenka does is just 0.1 more powerful than Jennifer Brady. But it doesn't much from the Simona Halep perspective. From the Jennifer Brady perspective, very different match than Garbine Muguruza. She's the one, I think,
certainly,
who makes the big adjustments. But, you know, Jennifer Brady, She knocked out, as I mentioned, she knocked out Ashleigh Barty already this year. And, you know, she's ready for the big times is what I'm saying. I don't think this is going to intimidate her. That being said, I'd lead Halep in straight sets.
Yeah.
Really hard to hit Simona Halep off a court.
Right. And that's essentially saying the same. Halep in straight sets is my prediction as well, because I think there are similarities in the way that Brady and Sabalenka will try to attack and play against Halep. But from what we just saw, why would that not work if it worked against Sabalenka, against Brady in the semis, you know what I mean? So I think Halep's going to be in a good position there. Like I said, I would also predict straight sets for Halep.
Yeah, I agree with you there. For Martich, Rybakina, I talked about Rybakina a lot on these past two mini breaks. So just in terms of the picks, do you think, you know, for her, she's played so much tennis already this season that, you know, maybe she starts to wear down a little bit against someone like Petra Martich, or do you see her riding that wave out?
I don't know. I would see Rybakina in this one. I will say, though, I would like to see her serve better, because even though she got a straight sets win over Pliskova today, weak numbers from the serve. And also, you know, just the serve and return just needs to be cleaned up from her, because if you look at the stats on both of those sides, just not great. Yeah, she's ultimately able to get it done, and Pliskova is just a different matchup in that regard when it comes to serve and return on the women's side. That being said, though, you know, if she's going to want to do well and continue throughout this tournament, that part's just got to get a little cleaner, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to ride her just because I don't think Martich has a clear weapon to hurt Rybakina with. And if you give Rybakina time, as we've learned in 2020, good night.
Yep, absolutely.
And then that Halep Rybakina, circle me in. I'm all in. I'll wake up whatever time. If it's another 3:30 in the morning match, I will be up watching that one. I promise you that.
Dedicated.
Yeah, no, that's what I have time to do nowadays, Jamie. I can adjust my sleep schedule if needed. But with that in mind, let's flip now to the ATP side, and we're going to talk about this out of order. Usually I go with the 500 first, but a couple of results still percolating in Rio and Del Rey, so we will come back to that. Hopefully those matches will be finished by the time we get to them.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Let's start in Marseille, though, because we had a full slate of action there, round of 16 matches finishing up to get our quarterfinals set for the weekend. Let's start with what I think was the most notable result of the day there, and there were a bunch of good ones, a bunch of young seeds in play. But the most notable, probably the number one seed, Daniil Medvedev's 1-6, 6-1, 6-2 win over Italian sensation, the Sin Man himself, the young 18-year-old Jannik Sinner. This match was a story of, you know, two completely different scripts. That first set, you know, I don't want to say, you know, it was because Medvedev was playing poorly, but he certainly wasn't playing well. Just nothing really working for him, no rhythm. In that first set, Sinner was getting a lot of easy forehands sitting on them, getting a lot of errors from Medvedev as well. Those slices just were sitting short. And then I saw boys 12's tennis, Jamie. Medvedev just locks in everything to the Sinner backhand side, make the match as long, as physical as possible on the younger player who's playing up an age division for Sinner in this case and playing with the big boys with Medvedev. This was a veteran win from Medvedev, but what did you learn from this match, Jamie?
There's a lot of takeaways. I think the first one, in terms of, you know, you see the first set, but in no way did I think, oh, wow, Sinner's going to run away with this. Because really, Medvedev's not a type of guy, at least from what we've seen, that you run away with a match on. Like, that just doesn't happen, right? We've seen him dig out of crazy holes on the biggest stages. You know, that's sort of part of has been his reputation. That guy does not go away. So I think the number one thing is just reiterating the fact that, yeah, Medvedev's never out of a match. You beat him 6-1 in a first set, so what? Like, you got to come back, because even though Medvedev was not at his best, it's still Daniil Medvedev, right? A guy who we just saw as so hot in the last year. And what's crazy, too, is you look at some of the stats in set one, I mean, just not a great performance from Medvedev, right? Under 50% on first serve percentage, and then also under 50% on the efficacy, of winning those first serve points. I mean, at 44%, only wins 55 of his second serve. I mean, just not a good serving performance from Medvedev in that first set, right? So not terribly surprising there. Then you flip the script into set two. He wins 90% of his first serve points. So it's just, like you said, tale of two different matches. Game style, all of that, I mean, yeah, very interesting. Those aren't my big takeaways. I think for me, on the center side, great to see him have that sort of effort, but really the biggest takeaways are on the Medvedev side, just reminding us of why he's at the top of the game.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were dumping on him on tennis Twitter after that first set of, you know, whatever he did this offseason, don't ever do it again, because after the way he played in Rotterdam, I think that was a first-round exit for him as well. Although, you know, given what Vasek Pospisil has done, I don't think that loss for Medvedev was particularly bad.
Awful.
Yeah, but, you know, here for him to flip the script. I think for Jannik Sinner, what I learned is this guy's 18 years old, and sometimes it shows. I think he's got that Rublev Fritz-ish quality about him where if it's a clean look on the ball, I mean, good night. He hits his forehand, particularly when he turns into it. Some of those balls drop on the baseline. I'm like, how did that ball go in? I mean, he just absolutely cannons it. I think we've spoken enough about what's so promising about Jannik Sinner. But like Rublev, like Fritz, a little stiff in the hips, Jamie. Not great. You know, he's not exceptional. He's not a fluid athlete like a Čorić or a Tiafoe, obviously, where he can get in and out of those corners easily. I think it's a little bit harder for him. And again, he's 18. He probably has squatted like 12 times in his life. And it's like, okay, you've stopped growing. Now we can get you into the serious lifting. Yeah. But for now, in the short term, I do think the movement's a little bit of a concern. And of course, he can hit his way out of so many jams. But come 3 out of 5 sets, you know, don't expect him to, I think, make a deep run, maybe even no second weeks this year at a major, because I just don't think the fitness is quite there yet.
I think that's fair. And, you know, of course, he's young too, but this is a match where even though it was ugly at times for Medvedev, you know, Medvedev, a guy, a phenomenal mover, particularly for his frame, and him being able to put that on display and show it as a differentiator to this 18-year-old up-and-comer, I think was an important thing in a match like this. Just reminding everybody that it's, okay, it's Daniil Medvedev who's established against a guy in Jannik Sinner who, as you mentioned, very promising, but yes, has multiple things to work on, including the physicality and the agility around the court.
I agree, but look, if Jannik Sinner wasn't promising enough, don't worry, you got some other great performances from some young stuff. Dennis Shapovalov, 6-4, 4-6, 6-2 over Marin Cilic. It's nice to see Shapovalov get some rhythm after that, you know, long lull since the ATP Cup where he just has struggled to find his form. And, you know, indoor hard court, you always think that's the best sort of surface for the young Canadian. And evidently, I think it will be moving forward. Any thoughts on that match, Jamie?
I mean, look, Shapovalov, I don't know. He did a lot of things right, particularly in that deciding set. If some of it's on Cilic here, right, especially when you go to the stats. I mean, look, Shapovalov hits 9 aces in set number 3. Yeah. He wins 80% of his 79%, excuse me, of his first serve points. You know, compare that to Cilic, who was just nowhere near as effective on his first serve. I mean, he really, Shapovalov did a great job of getting it done in set number 3. And also, just anytime you're going up against a guy in Marin Cilic, right, you have that in the back of your mind that this dude is experienced. He's a veteran on the tour. But that does not doesn't scare Shapovalov. He doesn't shy away from things like that. And I think every time we watch him and he has a good performance, it's like I don't know how exactly to explain it, but I get so excited every time I see Shapovalov do well because he's such an exciting player, right? And that sounds dumb, but he's just electric when you watch him. When that guy is on fire, there's nothing else in the world you want to do except for watch him play.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think someone who you could describe that about as well, Felix Auger-Aliassime, his fellow young Canadian who probably played in the match of the day. I know Team Winner is still ongoing. And, you know, that one can have a claim, although it does look like Dominic Thiem right now up a break in the third. Although Love 40 in that 4-2 game, we'll come back to that one.
He gets it to 30-40, just so you know.
Oh, really? I'm behind? That's funny. Oh, hey, great shot to my feed. But yeah, FAA probably played the match of this Thursday in his 6-0, 6-7, 7-6 win over Pierre Hughes-Herbert to advance to the quarterfinals here. I mean, you know, you can where to even begin? The match chops. I think both guys fought off 3 match points throughout the duration. Herbert coming up with some on-the-run passes off of FAA overheads. FAA just consistently attacking with that forehand, with that serve, the way he's able to get around the ball on the outside and unleash forehands inside in, inside out. I mean, I don't know what's left to say about FAA, but I'll say this. Today in particular, he showed off the big match chops that come when you've made the final the week before, and it's nice to just see him get a win like this the week after, that there's no hangover, that he can have this sort of result for the second week in a row.
Yeah, the only thing I will say, and you know, this is not really a knock on FAA, right? He got the job done, but it's great to see him get a win like this, like you mentioned, especially in a tough environment, right? He has, you know, he's going up against a guy who has the home crowd behind him, so that's impressive. The only part that's a little disappointing, I wish he would have won it in a bit of a different way, because really, yeah, it was a tight match and he did some great things, but Herbert double faulting to give FAA the opportunity to close it out is really what happened at the end of this match, which is unfortunate, you know, and I don't think the match needs to be defined by it because there are so many great things. It's just I wish it would have ended slightly differently. That's all I'll say. But ultimately, FAA doing a great job of, you know, taking advantage of the opportunities in front of him, getting across the finish line in a tough environment, tough win. All good signs from the Canadian.
Yeah, it's a great win for Felix. And, you know, just to real quickly, you look at the other wins today. Gerasimov knocks off David Goffin, 6-4, 7-6. Jill Simone, 6-4 over Alias Bedene. But you look at the matchups this weekend, it's going to be a really fun set of action. Oh, by the way, for FAA, as you mentioned, 71% first serve, 85% win percentage on those first serve points. That's what a veteran does, as you mentioned. But listen to these quarterfinals, all interesting for a variety of different reasons. You know, Medvedev, Jill Simone, that's fun. Gerasimov, FAA, that's fun. Sasha Buvlik, with his serve, his size, his ability to frustrate his opponent against a very combustible Denis Shapovalov, serves into that one-handed backhand. I'm all for that. And then Pospisil Tsitsipas. It's going to be a really fun weekend in Marseille, Jamie.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's look, whoever you are, you're going to want to watch one of these matches. I think people got to be circling the Pospisil Tsitsipas match. And once again, you mentioned those weekend mini breaks. For sure, this one we're going to get to talk about a lot, because Pospisil on a crazy hot streak at the moment, looking really good, whether it's the maple syrup on the changeovers or not. I mean, the guy's got something figured out. He beats Hurkacz in straight sets, setting up the battle with, you know, Tsitsipas. That one's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
By the way, Munar got the break back, so it's 3-4 now. Munar to serve in that third set. Yeah.
Big time.
I view Pospisil's thing. I have a thing where my goal is to eat an Eggo waffle every morning for the rest of my life. Now, whether that shortens it, we'll see.
Dude, but honestly, I'd be worth it. I will say this. There is a girl on my team. I got switched teams. This is a backstory that nobody needs to know, but I'm still going to say it. I got switched teams at work, and somebody on my new team comes in with Eggo waffles for breakfast every single day. She walks in every single day with the Eggo waffles on a plate and just houses them at her desk. I'm like, you are an icon.
Yeah, that's a legend. First of all, I do that exact same thing. And it also reveals a lot about a person of how they place the syrup on their waffles. You can learn so much about each person. Mm. Does that person have ADD? Do they go box by box? Do they only put specific boxes? Or is it the same boxes they're dousing syrup in every single time? Do they throw butter on the waffle if you're doing that? Really? Ooh. Wow, now you're enjoying yourself a treat.
I do peanut butter on the Eggo waffles and syrup on top. It's phenomenal.
When I'm ready to reward myself, like it's 12 days on the road, I throw, you know, that waffle, a little Nutella on there. And then if I'm feeling particularly dangerous, some syrup on top as well. And I mean, it's dessert. When it's a breakfast waffle, it's just the syrup. But a little bit after that, you know, when I'm really treating myself, nothing tops a well-decorated Eggo.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Well, I don't even know how we get back to that topic, but that's on me. That tangent's on me. For once, it's my fault.
Speaking of well-decorated Eggo waffles, yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Sasha Bublik? It's going to be a really fun quarterfinal. Your favorite heading into that one, the guy you think is going to emerge as champion there.
Ooh, champ of everything, that one. I mean, you got to say Medvedev. I mean, I know his form recently hasn't been great, but it's hard to doubt him because he comes through. He just comes through. You know, I don't see him losing in the quarters to Simone. I don't see him losing out of that top half of the semis. Yeah, maybe in FAA. If FAA gets through the quarters with relative ease, is really fresh and looks great, maybe. But I still see Medvedev as getting through. And then the bottom half, I don't know, bottom half is really a threat from all of them. I think you expect Shapovalov. The Pospisil Tsitsipas one, like I mentioned, circling it because I truly do think it could go either way. Medvedev's my pick all the way through.
I was going to say, you get mad at me. I ask you for one pick. You're picking each and every match. I love it. I'm like, hey, the more the merrier. Yeah, it's going to be a really fun week. What I will say is it's crazy we're now at a point, and maybe that because it's an ATP 250, you know, these guys are almost overqualified. But we might have a Tsitsipas Shapovalov FAA Medvedev four-person semifinal quartet.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And it feels like normal. It's not even weird. It's not like, oh, great breakthroughs for all four this week. It's like, no, if FAA loses to Gerasimov, if Shapovalov loses to Bublik, if Medvedev loses to Simone, those feels like upsets the other way. And, you know, we weren't at that point even as little as a year ago. So I think that's
It is crazy how normal it is now, but yeah.
Yeah,
that's good stuff. The young guns are firing.
Exactly. They've normalized it. Well, all of the matches are now down in Del Rey, so let's go there next. Not as much to break down in depth, only one big result to talk about, but let's start with the other stuff real quick in terms of the notable results. I think Steve Johnson, 6-4, 5-7, 6-1 over Jack Sock. Jack Sock looks better. He's not back, you know, but we're not quite there yet. For Stevie Johnson, I mean, for him to make an ATP 250 quarterfinal, you look at where he's at in the rankings right now. Steve Johnson currently sitting at number 73. So for him, you know, he wants to make that push into the Indian Wells Masters qualifying draws. He's going to need a big result here, you know, at least a semifinal. We've seen him on the Challenger circuit a bunch in 2020. So good result for him. Good win for Hugo Humbert, who gets his first professional win in his fourth try over fellow next-gener Miomir Kecmanovic, 6-4, 7-6. Kecmanovic served for that second set up 6-5. Couple of bad errors gave that one away. Terrible forehand shank on match point gives Hugo Humbert, the big lefty who got his first ATP title already this season, the straight set win, so he moves on to the quarterfinals. And then in the nightcap, Milos Raonic takes out Cedric Steeb, 7-5, 6-3. Jamie, any thoughts on those three matches before we get to our breakdown?
Yeah, I mean, just real quick on Sock and Stevie, it is good to see Jack Sock back out because it really has been such a drought. And, you know, you see flashes of it.
Great shot, back out, such a drought. Go on.
You know, that's what I do. Because, you know, when you see flashes of it, right? And you mentioned he's not totally back. No, I mean, and that's to be understood because this is really the first time he's able to get back out there and get a tour level win. Unfortunate the way that first set unfolds for him, really just kind of, I mean, had a bit of a letdown at the end of the first set because his level was fine. And yeah, Stevie came up with some big shots, particularly toward the end, came up with some good passes and then really ran away with the third. But I think honestly, that was just because, I mean, Jack Sock hasn't been in these sort of environments. He hasn't been in hard three set matches in a long time, right? And so definitely understandable there. Unfortunate to see. I mean, I look, Jack Sock, especially with the talent he possesses and the big forehand, always want to root for him in that regard. But yeah, I mean, Stevie's got to be feeling relieved here because this match was a little dicey.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, two guys who, you know, if you're like, hey, let's play backhand cross courts, there will be maybe three viewers of that. And they'd be like, I'm okay. But yeah, it was an interesting match, certainly for Jack Sock, just for him to get a win under his belt again this week. That's got to do numbers for his confidence. But speaking of a guy who's in desperate need of wins, maybe the biggest result of the day. Francis Tiafoe, straight set winner over fellow young American Tommy Paul, 7-5, 7-6. I mean, I plan on doing a full match breakdown for this that you guys will be able to find in written form on our website, crackedrackets.com, today on Friday. So I will give my thoughts in a second. But Jamie, I want to let you go first. Your thoughts on Tiafoe taking this match where total points won. It was Tiafoe 84, Tommy Paul 75. In the biggest moments, Francis Tiafoe got the job done. How is he able to do it, Jamie?
Yeah, I mean, look, Tiafoe played a good match. I mean, of course, these guys know each other's games so well, so that always just adds another element to it. I mean, Tiafoe, he just gave himself more opportunities, right? He gave himself seven, you know, break point opportunities. Ultimately, only ended up converting two of them, but that's good enough to get the job done. And you mentioned, you know, this was a very tight match, right? I mean, this realistically could have gone another way, particularly if you think if Tommy Paul is able to grab that tiebreak, you know, you think you go into a third set, all right, you know, who knows what's going on. I think Tiafoe really did a good job of getting, I don't know how to say it exactly, but the confidence has really been an issue for him, and so being able to play the game that he wants to play was very important. I thought his serve looked really solid today, which was great to see. You know, the first serve in particular was really effective. 83% of first serve points won, getting over 60% of those first serves in play. I mean, that's really what opened the door for him to relax a little bit. And when the opportunities did come, able to convert at least enough of them that it counted.
Yeah, my big problem, and again, I'm going to get into all this, the background. It was very clear from the get-go, these two guys know each other's games as well as any two player on tour. There are no secrets between them.
Sure.
For Francis Tiafoe, he made 62% of his first serves, won 83% of those points. That's fantastic, But that was really the only bright spot for him statistically. And it feels like we've been saying that, you know, for the past 2-3 years, where it's like, oh yeah, when he's making his first serve at a high percentage, when he's making that and winning those first serve points, I mean, that first serve is a certified weapon, high 120s, low 130s. It sets him up to load on a first plus one ball, whether it be his forehand, which he can, you know, take the time then to load up on the big backswing. He's comfortable serving and volleying as well. I mean, there's no doubt Francis Tiafoe has the serve and forehand of a top 100 player when it's set, or the serve plus one capabilities, excuse me, of a top 100 player. But I mean, Tommy Paul continued to expose Francis Tiafoe in terms of first serves for Paul. You knew where they were going. They were going to the Tiafoe forehand. The book is out. And I think for Francis Tiafoe, this year is going to be so much so about finding ways to escape, finding ways to win. And the lever he seems to pull the most, and it worked for him today, he sneaks forward to the net. He throws in the slice, and he just takes time away from you. And today, against Tommy Paul, it worked. But that's a high-variance sort of game to play, Jamie.
Yeah, and you know, you and I have talked specifically about this play for Tiafoe, right? When he gets the serve on the deuce side, takes the backhand up the line, follows it into the net. Yep. I mean, there are plays like that where Tiafoe does, and he looks golden. And, you know, realistically, you say that the only bright spot is his serve. I don't know if that's completely fair.
You're right.
I mean,
that was
he
an
took advantage where he did, especially for second serves, right? I mean, he wins 57% of those points when he's returning a second serve. I mean, maybe that says something about Tommy Paul as well, but that's pretty solid for Tiafoe.
If I can say, but once again, that speaks to the narrative of, sure, give him time to set up a ball, give him time to set up that forehand and get the full backswing into it, or, as you mentioned, the thing, you're right, this is another bright spot. I exaggerated a bit with some hyperbole, but when he takes that backhand, short backswing, early down the line, follows it in, those are bright spots. But the glaring weakness, I guess, and we've talked about it for 3 years, but whenever you bring up a Francis Tiafoe match, if you watch the match, you see his opponent targeting the forehand.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and it's obvious. And look, it happens, you know, even if it's not Tommy Paul, who knows him so well, it's anybody, because you're right, the book is out. You know, people know that's what you do. And ultimately, you know, it's good for him, because there are a lot of players out there, they have that weakness. People target, right? People are going to go to the sock backhand. He knows that. So what are you going to do about it? Same with Stevie Johnson. Okay, people are going to go to your backhand. What are you going to do about it? So there are a lot of people where, I mean, Del Potro in some ways too, particularly when he's coming back and hit backhand was nowhere near as strong. People are going to target the backhand, look for the slice, open up the point from there. And so there are so many players on tour that have that. And so it's really just being able to deal with it and understand how that shifts your game based on knowing how people are going to try and play you each and every time they step on the court.
Yeah, sure. And again, it's not like Tiafoe hasn't experienced this his entire life.
Right.
It's just now he's got the stress of, oh, wait, that Australian Open quarterfinal is not on my resume. I got to fight and scrap. Otherwise, I'm going to be back outside of the top 100 in no time. And I want to get into Grand Slams. I enjoy the paycheck you get with a minimum of a first-round appearance 4 times a year. That gets the job done. That pays the bills.
Yep.
And so it's crunch time for him. And so, you know, great win for him. I mentioned yesterday I wanted to see how he responded under pressure. And, you know, he certainly responded today with the straight side win. Really fun weekend of semifinals in Delray as well. It's got every flavor of next gen you could possibly want. On the top half of the draw, Francis Tiafoe, Ugo Humbert, Brandon Nakashima taking on Yoshihito Nishioka. On the bottom half, Sunwoo Kwon, the young Korean who's come through with a bunch of great results over these past couple of weeks, is going to take on Riley Opelka, and then Steve Johnson taking on Milos Raonic in the match from 2015 that no one seems to care about right now in 2020. Jamie, I think Raonic is probably the front runner without question, and I'm sure that's the answer you'd give. So outside of Milos Raonic, your front runner, if it's not going to be him, who's it going to be this weekend?
Oh, God. It hurts.
I'm trying to just buy time, by
the
way.
Well,
just for the record, I'm trying to buy time for Dominic Thiem and Munar, where it was Love 30. It's now 30-40 Munar, so match point Thiem.
I don't know. Give me Tiafoe, right? I mean, give me Tiafoe. I think at this point he needs a run like this. I mean, of course you want to say someone like Opelka too, because they can just serve their way out of everything. I mean, like the Raonic-Opelka match, if that one happens in the semis, you know, who's to say Opelka? I mean, who's to say Opelka can't win that match, right?
That
I mean,
that's over one of those under matchups. Over under 45 minutes.
No, of course it's going to be over. It's just going to be annoying to watch. no, but I mean, you look at it and it's like the matchups go like that, and you're like, okay, Opelka, Raonic, like, who knows, right? You'd say Raonic because, you know, we've seen that experience and we've seen more of an all-court game around. But regardless of any of that, I think I got to go with Tiafoe going all the way through.
Wow. Here's going the thing. For Tiafoe, the Umbert matchup is tough. The lefty serving into that forehand, although maybe it neutralizes it because the lefty's so used to building those patterns around serving into a righty's backhand. Mm-hmm. Maybe that actually gives Tiafoe an advantage in this one. That being said, I really like the game of Sun Wukong. I just think Opelka is a terrible matchup. I really love Yoshihito Nishioka. I just think if he plays Raonic, there's an absolute 0% chance just because of the Raonic. Wow, perfect.
One.
Yeah, that's just another really tough matchup. Oh, my God. The Mudar forehand landed in. Oh, he just fought off match point with a gutsy down-the-line forehand that was challenged and I believe called out initially, challenged by, oh, just off the line.
So what are you at on your stream now, Deuce?
No, it's now back up. Well, I know the score because I have the live score open. I know it's add out team, but they're just getting
done. I hate to say it. It's over.
It's over? Perfect timing. Well, then that's your pick. My pick for Del Rey. I stalled just long enough. Should I just take Nakashima just to be different? No. I'm going to take Opelka. I just think he is just eager to serve himself to another title. I think the signs are all there for a big breakout year from him in 2020. So I'm going to go with Opelka. But that brought us time to get all of those matches in Rio complete. That last event we want to talk about, we can go through this one quickly.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
We are buying time for that Team Munar match in particular. Dominic Thiem, the number one seed, escapes with a 6-7, 6-3, 6-4 win over the incredibly talented young Spanner, Jaume Munar. Point on this match, Jamie. Jaume, not you, Jamie, but Jaume, in last season, 35 total wins between the Challenger and ATP Tour. 30 of them came on clay. There's no doubt this is the surface he excels at the most. His shot tolerance for Dominic Thiem, he could just handle the pace. He moved so well around the court, kept Thiem off balance by throwing in down the lines and short angles and lobs and drop shots. This is a really impressive from the young Spaniard. My only criticism would be he really doesn't have an easy go-to weapon. There's no way for him to create simple points, and in the end, Thiem just able to wear him down.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Thiem did, you know, even though this wasn't the best we've seen Thiem by a long shot, he did what he does on clay, right? He gives himself opportunities, and you know, the ball is sitting up there for him, and he's going to hit the ball just huge from the baseline every single time. You know, the RPMs are going to be flying up, and that's what he does. I think Thiem, I will say Munar in this match, I watched a fair amount of it, and because Thiem, you know, insists on being so far back sometimes, Munar got a lot of free points on easy drop shots. Now Thiem, when he did have the opportunity, did a good job of getting off the baseline, coming into the net and finishing off points. But, you know, man, Thiem is very comfortable giving up points like that. He's okay with it. Because he knows that eventually, you know, he's going to get neutral shots that he is just going to be able to absolutely tee off on. And to him, it's worth it to have that time behind the baseline and give up a few points that Munar is going to get by hitting a drop shot.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I think for Dominic Thiem, it's that he found his range when he wasn't playing his absolute best, and that's so important
for sure
to do. Now, this was a 2-out-of-3 set battle, and I think for Munar, the question is, can he keep that sort of physicality up 3 out of 5 sets? Certainly big picture, and if he wants to be, you know, just the sort of player who makes deep runs at a French Open, it's clear that clay is going to be a surface he excels on. I mean, he absorbed pace so well, as I mentioned. His backswing's compact, so it's not as though anyone's game is going to throw him out of his rhythm. He could handle the ground strokes, the blistering ground strokes of Dominic Thiem. But yeah, just nothing's going to come easy for Jaume Munar, and that is certainly a concern. You imagine, you know, on a given day, would you rather be a Jaume Munar playing your best or a Jan-Lennard Struff? Who do you think wins that matchup on clay, Jamie?
Well, it's so hard because Struff just hits the absolute crap out of the wall.
That's what I'm saying. And
so
that's
the guy playing the best isn't probably not fair. That being said, though, maybe a hot take. I don't know. I think Munar will win a French Open.
Will do well? Will win it?
I will say I think he will win a French Open. Not this French Open, but I think he will win a French Open.
Okay. That's the cutoff line for me. For me, like, if you say Zverev's going to win a French Open, sure. Tsitsipas, sure. FAA, sure. Munar, he's going to do well. Could he make a semifinal there someday? Absolutely.
Give it, like, 5 years.
No, too small. I get why, you know, from one Haumi to another, why the appeal is there. But I don't see it.
I mean, he got to the final of the juniors, so, like.
Yeah, but that's the juniors.
True, but come on, there's some translation there. Also, I mean, no. The dude's good on clay. I don't know. It's just my take.
If you're asking me good take, bad take, hot take, that's a hot take. It's not a bad take. It's just a hot take.
All right, I can take that.
Yeah. Speaking of hot take, one of the hot takes, Borna Coric, get him out of here. A recent take for many people. Building himself back here, the 5 seed, a 6-3-1-6-7-6 win over the talented young Brazilian Tago Sabeth Vild. Jimmy, we can start there before we get to our other two matches, but just confidence-wise, huge for Coric.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big one for Coric. You know, you look at the matchup and the name, you might not think this is a big match. To me, this was a monumental match for Coric. I was like, dude, you got to get it across the line on this one, right? So I'm sure he's feeling a lot of emotions. Probably at the top of that list is just simply relief at this point, right? That he gets through this match, gets him through to one more round. But yeah, big one here, you know. Definitely not Coric's best, particularly in that second set. Ultimately, though, this is something, like you mentioned with team, when you're not playing your best, how are you going to get it done? And Coric, you know, at least showing that he has that quality in him.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good win for Borna Coric. At this point, every win is a good win for Borna Coric. So certainly he'll take it heading into the weekend. The other two results, Sonego knocks off the number 2 seed, the Deuce, Dusan Lajovic, 7-6-7-6. Gianluca Manche, 6-3-7-6 over Zhao Dominguez. That sets up our quarterfinals here. We've got on the top, from top to bottom, Team versus Gianluca Majer, Ateliz Belaz versus Pedro Martinez, Federico Coria versus Christian Garin, Borna Coric versus Lorenzo Sonego. Jimmy, I really hope we get a Garin-Dominic team final in this one, because to me, that's a potential round of 16, maybe even quarterfinal at the French Open, and I would love to see it this early in the season.
You'd rather see the Garin team battle than the Coric team battle?
Yeah, I don't need to see Borna Coric on clay. I don't. I know enough about Borna Coric on clay right now at this point to know he is not a threat to make a deep run at the French Open. And maybe I'm wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong. But I think that's a
hot on borderline. You think
it's
take?
No, it's a hot take to say you think Christian Garin is going to do worse. I mean, it's all draw dependent. But if I tell you right now who's going to do better at the French Open, Christian Garin or Borna Coric, who would you take?
I mean, I don't know. Stylistically, of course, Garin's going to favor the clay. But in terms of just their play and that level, I think Borna Coric is the better tennis player.
What do we want to bet? Let's bet a dinner. Some sort of dinner. I'm 100% certain that Christian Garin – I mean, draw dependent.
I'll mail you this Michigan beanie that I bought.
No, I was going to say I'll send you a week-old Chick-fil-A sandwich from Indiana over to you, like an Oreo shake.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'll send you a box of Eggos. But let's bet a box of Eggos. Full circle.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Wow, great transition. It only took like 15 minutes. But no, I mean, for real, like, look, of course, we know Christian Garin. We know Garin on the clay, right? We know that that's his preferred service. But I just think Coric is still a better player. Of course, like you mentioned, draw dependent, and so much of it gets down to that. But Borna Coric, he's just got so much potential. And we've seen him beat the big guys. I don't know, especially when it comes into the majors. Yeah, we've seen some flops from him as well. But, I mean, he's still so young and still has so much potential in this. I don't know. Coric still excites me, even though it's on the clay. I'll just leave it there.
Top of your head, who's ranked higher right now, Christian Garin or Borna Coric?
Let's say Garin.
You cheated. Garin. Christian Garin with this win up to a career high, number 24. Borna Coric right now, number 31 in the live rankings. I'll point out they're both 23 years old. You know, both, you know, very, very, very young. So I do think right now those are two guys who, different points. Chorich, he already had that breakthrough. Christian Garin is still on that first run where he's breaking into top 25, then top 20, all these firsts in his career confidence-wise. I just think Christian Garin, he's run off, what, like four or five straight three-set matches, something crazy like that. I love Christian Garin coming into this French Open. I think my tweets today made that clear. But I just, it's two guys at completely different places.
Definitely. Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
All right, and we will get to see all of that and more this weekend on our weekend mini breaks. As I mentioned, Jamie and I as well going to record a Great Shot podcast live on YouTube discussing our biggest winners and losers in this post-Australian Open push. We'll have some fun segments planned, of course, as well. I'm thinking we bring back good take, bad take, hot take, Jamie.
I'm always here for that. I always have takes.
Yeah, exactly. I've been writing some down as well, so we'll bring all of that back and more. Be on the lookout for that. And, of course, if you haven't already, like, rate, subscribe, review this podcast, the Great Shot podcast, the Cracked Interviews podcast, courtesy of our friends at AeroBar right now. You can get yourself a chance to win a signed John Isner, signed Steve Johnson t-shirt. All you have to do is leave that review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. Leave your username away for us to enter you into the competition. And for every review you leave, your name will be entered an additional time. So again, huge shout out to those two sponsors and the promo code for AeroBar, Cracked30 for our friends at Diadem, CR50 as well. I mentioned it also, if you want to hear more from us this weekend for our weekend mini breaks, please go give our Patreon a look, because we're able to travel to these tournaments now. We've had some really fun opportunities, and we've released a lot of the content as audio feeds, but if you want to see video of what we've been up to, chatting with all these college coaches, players in person, all of that and more, go give that Patreon a look. Shout out to all of those who subscribe already, who have themselves a Cracked Rackets mug courtesy of that Patreon subscription. And if you sign up today, you also can bring home a beautiful CR mug. What else do we have for them, Jimmy? Cracked interviews wise, who have we talked to the past week? Madison Brangle, Claire Liu, David Roditi, Brett Macy, Daniel Kukerman, who was just named most outstanding player. Our Great Shot podcast, by the way, giving our big takeaways from the National Indoors on the men's side, I believe went out today as well. So if you missed anything from that action, be sure to go give that a listen. We give our spins on the all tournament team. Ooh, Jamie, you want to give a little 30-second shout out to who you have to win these D3 National Indoors?
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot here. I don't.
You knew
it
was coming.
Did I though? Do I have to do that for you? No. I mean, well, Greskin, you know, you talk a lot, but man, you get me on the open road about D3 tennis, and boy, I can talk a lot too. I mean, there's a lot from this. I mean, I think there's some favorites. You know, if you even go off of things like, you know, Power 6 on UTR, CMS is going to be your favorite. I think they're favored by at least a few points on that Power 6, but they're in the 2 seed. They're going up against Case in the first round, which is honestly, even though it's a 2-7, a really interesting matchup, given the fact that Case has had so many exciting people, especially James Hopper, the freshman. Oh, man. I mean, where do we go? I'm always intrigued by Chicago. And you know what? I'll give it to Chicago. Chicago comes up with the most ridiculous talent in the country, and they've just got to be able to execute. You know, indoors, of course, we've seen success from them last year. I'll say they do it again. We see repeat big time.
I'm fine with that. We were just at the beautiful XS Tennis Village. I know that is the home court of the Chicago tennis program. They were gracious hosts, so they've got good karma coming their way, and I know you are hoping to get a recap episode of that out at the end of this weekend, but, you know, we're always down to talk more ITA tennis here, and so just another fun event to add to the list of things to monitor this weekend. Of course, the reason we're able to keep you guys up to date on all things going on in the tennis world, our super producers, Max Fliegner and Daniel Westhoff, who continue to have a f*** of an editing job to do. And thank you to them, as always. Westhoff finally back home in Indy. We get to spend our first couple of days consecutively as actual roommates, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes as well. So all of that and more coming up this weekend. But for now, for my wonderful co-host James Foster McDonald, our super producers Max Fliegner, Daniel Westhoff, our sponsors at both Diadem and AeroBar, and from all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host Alex Gruskin. Jamie, what do we tell the listeners?
That's a break,
and we will see you all this weekend, hopefully. Thanks, everyone.